Thank you very much, Lynn. And I don't mind that you took a couple minutes to finish that. I also was enjoying listening. Hello, everyone. Happy Wednesday. It's good to see you. We are here now for the guiding light. And last week, when we were looking at the Bible, we were looking at John chapter 3. We were looking at verses 22 to 36 at the end of the hour. And I mentioned that as I read those verses, there were two simultaneous interpretations that came into my mind. And so I spent most of last week talking about the first interpretation. And then I said I would return and talk about the second interpretation today, which I briefly introduced at the end of last week. The first interpretation was an interpretation of humility, which was an interpretation I had given you all the story of a vision that I had early on my spiritual path about there being many, many teachers helping us out of a deep cavern into awakening. And I said that, you know, humility on the path of awakening, you know, when this process seems to still be occurring, humility is both knowing who you can help because you've already been through the stages that they're just now going through. So you do recognize where they're at and you can help them. But also humility is knowing who can help you, who is ahead of you on the spiritual path. So it's, you know, and who can help you through the stage that you're currently at. And that's humility in the awakening process. And we all help each other out of the cavern of dream world into awakening. What I am going to do is play a song, like I like to do. In fact, this is a new song that I just discovered 2 days ago. It's an old song, but new to me, that I just discovered 2 days ago by accident, and I really like it. I'm glad I ran into it. And then I will read these verses again and then go into the second interpretation of these verses that occurred to me. So first, for my new old song, it's by Mike Scott and the Waterboys. And it's called, What Do You Want Me to Do?
I've tried to do things my own way, and I've tried to do what people say, and I'm going nowhere fast, and I'm turning to you at last. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do, Lord? I can see the lights of home, but I can't get there on my own. I can see the land in strife, but I need you to steer my ship. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do, Lord? Let the enemy turn me around. I've wasted love and I've wasted time. I've been proud and I've been blind. I've got a lot of things to change, a whole man to rearrange. And if you'll show me how, I'll begin right now. What do you want me? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do, Lord? What do you want me to do, Lord? see you one minute.
Could you all hear what he's whispering at the end? He says, I'm listening. I'm listening. I'm listening. It's just it's a great song. At least for me it is. I love that song. So I am going to begin reading the Bible then. The same verses that we were looking at last week. So John chapter 3, starting at verse 22. After this, and by the way, after this, for those of you who don't know, the story right before it was the one where Jesus was having his conversation with Nicodemus about you must be born again. So after this conversation with Nicodemus, most likely the next morning, I would guess, but now I'm making stuff up. After this, Jesus and his disciples went out into the Judean countryside, where he spent some time with them and baptized. Now John also was baptizing at Aenon near Salim, because there was plenty of water and people were constantly coming to be baptized. This was before John was put in prison. An argument developed between some of John's disciples and a certain Jew over the matter of ceremonial washing. They came to John and said to him, Rabbi, that man who was with you on the other side of the Jordan, the one you testified about, well, he is baptizing, and everyone is going to him. To this, John replied, A man can receive only what is given him from heaven. You yourselves can testify that I said, I am not the Christ, but am set ahead of him. The bride belongs to the bridegroom. The friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him, and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. That joy is mine, and it is now complete. He must become greater. I must become less. The one who comes from above is above all. The one who is from the earth belongs to the earth and speaks as one from the earth. The one who comes from heaven is above all. He testifies to what he has seen and heard, but no one accepts his testimony. The man who has accepted it has certified that God is truthful. For the one whom God has sent speaks the words of God. For God gives the Spirit without limit. The Father loves the Son and has placed everything in his hands. Whoever believes in the Son has eternal life, but whoever rejects the Son will not see life, for God's wrath remains on him. And so this was the section that I was reading last week when I said two interpretations came simultaneously. One, of course, the interpretation of humility, you know, knowing where we really are on this path of awakening. What stages have we passed through? And therefore, we can help others through that same stage. But also, who is ahead of us and can help us through the stages that we still have to go through. So that is one interpretation. But another interpretation that came is a lot more symbolic. We've talked about the fact that John the Baptist is symbolic of the stage of purification, and Jesus is symbolic of the stage of what I was calling Christ consciousness. I also like the word grace awareness. I'm typing that in the room so you can see it, because it's one word, not two. I like the word grace awareness rather than Christ consciousness. Christ consciousness is nice, but, you know, I like to get a little more, I suppose I'm not doing anything. It seems like people may already have ideas about what Christ consciousness is, and so I want to be as specific as possible. And you might not think of Christ consciousness as grace awareness, so I want to use the words grace awareness. Grace awareness would be that awareness that at some point we all become aware of. It's always there. But, you know, when we're completely involved in the world and in the mind, we're not aware of grace awareness. When we become aware of grace awareness, we can focus our attention on grace awareness. And grace awareness is able to, you could say, finish the job of purification and pull us, like a magnet, you know, pulls a pin, pull us all the way into the heart of awakening. This is what grace awareness can do. It's the miracle power. It's the miracle power. So once grace awareness arises, and by arise, I mean we become aware of it, there is very, very little left for us to do except to abide in that grace awareness. This is where the I need do nothing statement comes in. When we're going through the purification phase, the initial purification phase that's represented by John the Baptist, and you remember how John the Baptist used to always yell, "Repent! Repent!" That word repent means change your mind, change your way of choosing, change your way of being, which means we are doing something in that phase. You know, we are noticing, for example, that every time the mind tells me how somebody else is better than me, or how I'm a loser, or how I'm better than somebody else, because that's really the same thing. Whenever the mind starts chattering in any of those ways, I am now choosing not to listen to it, where before I just listened and believed it, right? And through doing this, I am being purified of the I am bad belief, which is also called guilt, unworthiness, or shame, or sometimes lack. Lack meaning I am not enough. I am not enough. That kind of lack. So during the purification phase, this is when we might be doing root cause analysis, a root cause inquiry, looking to see what belief we're believing, choosing then to let go of that belief, right? So there's kind of an activity that is happening during the purification phase. But when grace awareness is uncovered, and we have become aware of grace awareness, at this point we also actually have learned how to stop the activity. We've learned how to just be. You could say that we've learned how to just be through practices like rest, accept, and trust. You know, when we were in the purification phase and there was great fear about running out of money, or great fear about what people think of me, and we chose not to take control, we chose just to rest, accept, and trust, right? What we were really learning was to just be. We were learning to do nothing. And that was also clearing away a lot of clouds of false belief. And so as these clouds of false belief are cleared away, and the blue sky of grace awareness is revealed, and we have also now learned how to just be, Now what we can do is be within the focus of grace awareness and allow the awakening to complete itself. So with that said, let me share with you some of what is written here in the Bible. First of all, you know, they're complaining to John because Jesus is also baptizing people. And I don't know, maybe they expect John to get jealous. Maybe they expect John to go over to Jesus and say, "What the heck are you doing? Baptizing is my job." I don't know what they expect. But of course, John does not in any way react in that way. John says, "A man can receive only what is given him from heaven. You yourselves can testify that I said I am not the Christ, but am set ahead of him." So what this is referring to symbolically is that John represents the purification phase, the phase of activity, the phase of looking, actively choosing differently, actively learning to be, rest, accept, and trust, this more active, more efforting type of phase that we need to go through. And because this phase you know, I don't like the words that are about to come because they're not wholly true. You know, as you know, it's very difficult sometimes to say things. But because this phase is not filled with grace awareness, this phase can only do what it does, which is the activity. Now, the reason I didn't like those words is because grace awareness is always present. But the person going through the purification at this stage is not aware of the grace awareness. You know, and so because of what the person going through this stage is aware of, the only thing they know is the activity of learning to look, the activity of choosing again. And the activity of being committed to my decision of choosing again and doing it consistently, all of that activity, that's all that they know. They cannot at this stage yet know grace awareness. So that's what John is saying. He's saying here at the purification stage, this grace awareness, it's not present, which again is not wholly true, but it doesn't appear present. Let's put it that way. It doesn't appear present. And I have told you that I am the purification phase. He says, the bride belongs to the bridegroom. Now, the bride here represents those who are called to awakening, just like a bride is called into marriage. The bride belongs to the bridegroom. The bridegroom here is grace awareness. This is where the marriage is going to take place. This is where that disappearance of the personal self and merging into awakening, merging into grace is going to occur, is the marriage between the one who is called to awakening and the grace awareness that awakens. And Jesus is the symbol of that grace awareness. So he's saying that the bride now needs to go to the bridegroom. Because this is where the marriage of awakening is going to happen. He says, the friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. He also says, I missed this part. This was the part I was looking for. He says, you yourselves can testify that I said I am not the Christ, okay? But I am sent ahead of him. So John is saying this phase, this active phase of purification is sent to, you know, it happens in order to clear out enough space for the grace awareness to arise, or for the one who is called to awakening to become aware of the grace awareness. But once this occurs, it is time for the grace awareness to take over. It is time for the bride to leave, you know, it's kind of like it's time to leave the beauty salon where you were getting all fixed up for the wedding and go to the wedding. Right? It's time to leave the purification phase and immerse yourself in grace awareness and cease the activity. And there's a really important reason for ceasing the activity when the time comes, right? When the time comes. Because you can't continue to actively pursue awakening and let go of the idea that you are the personal self. Because the one that is actively pursuing awakening is the personal self. So at some point, that activity of pursuing awakening needs to be let go. And the personal self, that's when the I need do nothing comes. That's when eternal rest for the personal self begins. So you yourselves can testify that I said I am not the Christ. I am the purification phase that is sent ahead of the emergence of grace awareness. The bride, the one who is called to awakening, belongs to the bridegroom, grace awareness. The friend who attends the bridegroom, and now he's referring to himself and the purification phase, the friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him, right? That's what the purification phase is for, to clear enough attachment, enough false belief, etc., so that grace awareness can emerge. So the friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. This was the goal of the purification phase, was to clear away the space for grace awareness to emerge into consciousness. That joy is mine, John says. Grace awareness has now emerged into consciousness. This is what Jesus symbolizes. And it is now complete. He, grace awareness, must become greater. I, active purification, active seeking, right? I must become less. So it's a transition of phases that is occurring. He says, the one who comes from above, referring to grace awareness, the one who comes from above is above all. The one who is from the earth belongs to the earth. And you know, the seeker, the active seeker, belongs to the earth. And speaks as one from the earth. The seeker that is choosing not to believe the I am bad thought, or choosing not to believe the lack thought, that seeker, although there's a lot of wisdom guiding that one through this purification phase, that seeker does not yet have the vision that we might call true perception. That seeker still sees as a person, right? And so that seeker is one who still comes from the earth and who speaks from the earth. The one who comes from heaven is above all. Again, grace awareness is beyond that seeker. And so it's time for the bride to go to the grace awareness. It's time for the one who is called to awaken, to leave the stage of seeker, leave the stage of activity, leave the stage of purification, and go into the restful stage of grace awareness. He testifies to what he has seen and heard, he being here, grace awareness. He testifies to what he has seen and heard, but no one accepts his testimony. So the human, the one who still thinks like a person, cannot believe the truth that is being stated from the spontaneous flow of grace awareness, which in this case would be the words through Jesus's mouth, but it would be the same as the words that we just heard through Rupert Spira before Lynn stopped the audio, right? I mean, think about if you were here to hear what Rupert Spira was saying. Think about taking Rupert Spira and those words he was using and placing him in, I don't know, maybe your parents' living room, you know, when your whole family, all your cousins and everybody are gathered, and having Rupert Spira speak those words to them. Now, unless your family is very different from mine, you know, none of my family's on this path. None of my family has gone through any purification. They all still fully believe they are the person. They fully believe every one of their false beliefs. They're fully attached. Yeah, Kathy said they would be rolling their eyes. They cannot understand what Rupert Spira is talking about. They cannot accept it. You know, they might think you brought some crazy guy home, right? This is crazy guy you got brought home. Where'd you pick him up? Right? And so that's what this is saying. The world, the people who still think with the pre-purification state of mind cannot accept grace awareness. And this is why one needs to move through this intermediate stage, right? This intermediate stage where letting go happens, where you go from the way you used to think in the world through a stage of letting go, grace awareness emerges, and then you can begin to rest in it, listen to it, trust it, right? So he says, grace awareness testifies to what he has seen and heard, but no one accepts grace awareness's testimony. The man who has accepted it has certified that God is truthful. And here I feel that John the Baptist is really referring to himself, but symbolically that would be someone who stands at the other end, the other side of the purification stage. So when we're entering into the purification stage, we're still too closely related to our own thinking and our own conditioning. But after we move through the purification stage and we're beginning to emerge out to where we're ready for grace awareness, that's beginning to arise in us, now we can hear, we can feel, we can recognize grace awareness, and we can rest in it. We're beginning to get, you could say, a sense of reality. So the man who has accepted it has certified that God is truthful. For the one whom God has sent speaks the words of God. For God gives the Spirit without limit. The Father loves the Son and has placed everything in His hands. And remember, the Son is pure awareness, before mind, prior to mind, like Rupert Spira was saying. When I use the symbol of the four principles of God, the second principle of God is the awareness that is the Son. The mind is not birthed until the third principle of God. So, and that's even the spiritual law level of mind. There's another level of mind that isn't birthed until the fourth principle of God, which would be thought. So he says that the Father loves the Son. So we could say potent life loves awareness and has placed everything in its hands. Whoever believes in the Son, whoever believes in the power of awareness, the grace of awareness, has eternal life. But whoever rejects the Son will not see life. Whoever rejects the Son, whoever who does not believe in this grace awareness, is not interested in listening to someone talk about this grace awareness, right? They're still fully focused on the world. They are not going to be aware of the isness that is in everything. They're still going to see the world and manifestation as true. And then it says, for God's wrath remains on him. But that, of course, is completely symbolic, meaning only that he's completely wrapped up in the world and that he will continue to, you know, have good days and bad days, you know, just like you do when you're in the world. And so there will be suffering. So again, Chapter 3, as I've mentioned before, chapter 3 of the book of John is one of my favorite chapters in the entire Bible. Because, first of all, we have Jesus in conversation with Nicodemus explaining that in order to awaken, you must be born again, but you need to be born of both the water and the Spirit. And the water represents the purification phase, and then the Spirit recommends going deeper and deeper into the wisdom, or we could say deeper and deeper into the grace awareness. So both parts are needed. And one of the things that I heard Rupert Spira say as I was coming into the room, he says something like, now of course I'm you know, paraphrasing here, but something like, in the olden days, I think prior to Ramana Maharshi, maybe, people had to go through this long purification phase. I think he said like for 14 years or 20 years or something like that before they came to, he didn't use the word grace awareness, but before they came to grace awareness. And that's really the path that the Bible seems to be describing here. It's describing this phase of going through purification and then grace awareness arises. But then, Rupert Spira seemed to be saying that, however, what Ramana Maharshi brought to the world was the direct path of self-inquiry, where you look and look and look for that grace awareness. You awaken to that grace awareness. However, what was really interesting about what he said is, then you go through the purification phase, and it's a gentler way of going through the purification phase. But he said in his audio that you must do both. And that's exactly what Jesus is saying here in the Bible. You must be born again. You must be born of water and spirit. And maybe in Jesus' time, with just the amount of light that was in the world, maybe, and I'm, by the way, hear the word maybe. I'm not teaching facts here because I don't know. Maybe. It's like Rupert Spira said, maybe that was the only way, was to go through purification first, grace awareness arises, and then you emerge, you surrender to grace awareness. And maybe with Ramana Maharshi, who is also very, very clear, very powerful, very awakened, maybe this brought a new opportunity in to awaken first to grace awareness. And then with grace awareness to go through purification. And maybe that's not something that we get to choose. You know, maybe I can't say, oh boy, I like that idea of grace awareness first. I think I'll do that. You know, or, oh, I don't know. That sounds too hard. Maybe I'll do the regular. Maybe we don't get to choose. Maybe this all just happens. And maybe the only reason for these teachings is to give us an understanding of what we are going through so that we can be more allowing and less resistant. For example, my first experience with purification began in the fall of 2004. And it was a part of the I Am Bad Thought, but more specifically, this chunk of the I Am Bad Thought, I would call self-hatred. Self-hatred was the first thing that I purified of. And I had really repressed this self-hatred. So first, it had to come out of repression. This is when I learned root cause inquiry. I learned it with myself, looking at why I was upset, and found this self-hatred, which then began to rise. And when the self-hatred began to rise, it was so powerful. It was amazing how much it changed the way I saw the world. When the self-hatred was repressed, you know, the people that were around me, you know, I thought, you know, we all had pretty good relationships, you know. We worked well together. We were friends. We went out to lunch. But when the self-hatred started to rise, it like brought this filter across my eyes that changed everything, changed the way I saw. I saw through the filter of self-hatred. And suddenly the people who I thought that I got along pretty well with, suddenly my mind was telling me, you know, they hate you. They really hate you. They've always hated you. They're just pretending to like you because you're the boss. Because I was. they hate you. They can't wait till you shut up. They can't wait to get away from you. And this was very intense. This wasn't as friendly as I'm sounding right now. It was like the devil. It was like the devil living in my head. And there was the feeling that my whole body, the emotional feeling of just disgust with myself. Just, you know, self-hatred on every pore of the body. So I've got the mind telling me how much everybody else really secretly hates me. I've got this feeling of self-hatred all over the body. I remember when it was rising up, it was so powerful that I could taste it. I mean, I bet you I walked around for 2 months with bad breath. I mean, it tasted like I had bad breath. I could taste this self-hatred. And the only reason I was able to go through that 2 months, that's about how long it lasted, the only reason I was able to go through that 2 months and allow this purification to happen was because I understood that I was going through purification. And I remember even being grateful that other people still had projection and denial to keep them safe from this until they were ready to go through purification. I was actually grateful that other people did not have to experience it until they were ready. But the reason I was able to experience it was because I understood. So maybe the reason for these teachings is so that we have some understanding of what we are going through, and then we can allow it. Where without understanding, we would be fighting it. The next belief that began to purify, and it took a good year before it moved through. You know, the first belief was 2 months. The second one was at least a year. It was this belief in lack, this belief in lack. I don't know, just the belief in lack. And there was a lot of fear when that belief was coming through, a lot of fear. And I had to do the same thing. I remember walking around shaking. There was so much fear coming up that I had repressed for God knows how long, that I was literally shaking. And people would ask me, you know, what's up? What's up? And, you know, I don't remember what I would say. I would say something to make them feel at ease. But I did nothing to stop this intense feeling of fear that I felt for. Actually, I think it was nearly a year. I think the fear started coming up in January of 2005, and I think it finally ended around November of 2005. So it was really nearly a year that I went through this fear rising. But again, the reason I was able to allow that to happen was because I knew I was purifying, and even beyond that, I wanted to purify. I wanted to purify. I wanted to see beyond the way I saw. You know, I didn't know the term grace awareness. I didn't know anything about what came after purification, but I knew that it was different and that it was godly. And I wanted to know it. And so I allowed purification. And so maybe this is the only reason for the teachings, is so that when we start experiencing this, we have some understanding of what we're experiencing. We understand that as intense as it is, it's perfectly normal, and it's going in the direction that we wanted to go, the direction of awakening, and we can step back and allow it to happen. I notice Carrie has written, I never hated myself or thought others hated me. I always thought others, and still do to some extent, were idiots. And that, of course, is just a projection of self-hatred, actually. That's a projection. When we're healed of self-hatred, we see everybody in the same equal light. That's how you know that it's healed. If it's repressed and you don't feel it, like, you know, I remember one time somebody raised his hand at one of the conferences I was speaking at and said, yeah, but I've never felt unworthy. I've always known that, you know, I'm successful, I'm attractive, I've always known this. And I said, well, do you look out and see anybody else that's unworthy? He goes, oh yeah, that's the projection. In other words, the belief is there, it's just very repressed. And that's where I started, Carrie. That's why I said it was repressed. For me, And first it had to come out of repression, and then it was so powerful because I had so successfully repressed it for so very long. And that's when I experienced it. So I didn't live a conscious life of hating myself and thinking others hated me. That was repressed. All right, so what I'm going to do now is just go ahead and move on to John chapter 4. We'll see what comes up next. So the next story in the Bible is Jesus talks with a Samaritan woman. And for those of you who don't know, racism was alive and well in Jesus' time. And certain groups of people, you know, Jesus being a Jew, did not mix with, did not talk to other groups of people. So a Samaritan and a Jew, you know, these people did not mix. Right. In fact, you've heard the story of the Good Samaritan. That's a story where a Jewish person is terribly injured, and other Jewish people walk right on by and do not assist this injured person, and a Samaritan stops and assists the Jew. And the reason that's such an incredible story is because Jews, you know, Jews obviously mixed with Jews, but Samaritans and Jews did not mix. So for a Samaritan person to stop and help a Jewish person showed that this Samaritan person had compassion and love and at least in this circumstance saw beyond the racist conditioning of the time. So now we're going into a story where Jesus, a Jew, is going to talk with a Samaritan woman. And so again, in his time, this would have been shocking to some people, shocking that in the eyes of the Jew, he would have been lowering himself to talk to the Samaritan. In the eyes of the Jew, the Samaritan was a much lower group. So here we go. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. When the Lord learned of this, he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. So this seems to be saying that, you know, Jesus at this point in his ministry, you know, he wasn't looking for trouble, you know, so as soon as the Pharisees would start coming after him and, you know, raising all kinds of Cain, you know, about what are you doing? Who are you? What authority? You know, Jesus just would leave. You know, he would just go somewhere else. He wasn't at this point in his ministry interested in that kind of debate. So he left and went on to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria. So yes, between Judea and Galilee is the area of Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground where Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. Oh, I've been there. This is what's fun about having been to Israel a few times. And in fact, when I was at Jacob's well, we were walking from Nazareth to Capernaum. It was a four-day walk, and that's when we went to Jacob's well. So Jesus was there too. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. So even this question was probably extremely shocking to this Samaritan woman. I mean, again, imagine extreme racist thoughts, right? And the Samaritan is the lowly one in the eyes of the Jew. Jesus is not only talking to her, Jesus is saying, "Will you give me a drink?" He is willing for her to draw water into a cup that comes from her house, right? Give it to him, let it touch his lips, and have him drink it. So she's probably already like, you know, here's a guy from a race who these people don't even speak to people like me. And he's willing to allow me to draw water for him. He's willing to drink from my cup. or my bucket or my bowl or my spoon or whatever it was that she had for him to drink out of. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan. How can you ask me for a drink?" And then it says in parentheses, "For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from him himself, as did also his sons and his flocks and herds?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water, welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go, call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." Jesus declared, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I, who speak to you, am he." So that's the story of Jesus and the Samaritan woman. And of course, we all understand, I think, that when Jesus is talking to her about, you know, let me give you living water and you will never thirst again, he's talking about grace awareness. He's saying, you know, let grace awareness arise. You know, immerse yourself in grace awareness. Become a lover, you know, like the Sufis would say, become a lover of the beloved grace awareness. And you will never thirst again. And, you know, of course, she doesn't have understanding of this. But as he continues to talk to her about it, something in her, even though she doesn't have any mental understanding of this grace awareness, something in her is giving some kind of a confirmation. Just like when many of us, for example, picked up A Course in Miracles for the first time. You know, when I picked up A Course in Miracles, I couldn't even hardly understand it. Even though those words were English words, they were making almost no sense to me at all. A little, but not much. And yet something in me was telling me to listen. Something in me was telling me that this was truth, right? But that's what's happening with this woman. She can't really understand what Jesus is talking about, this living water. But something in her is telling her to listen. And so she says, "I want it." You know, she really has no idea what it is, but I want it. This is coming from within. I want it. And so then what's really interesting in this conversation is he says, "Go and get your husband." And she says, "I don't have a husband." That right there, that little bit, represents her purification. In that little bit, she chose not to pretend to be something other than she was. She chose to be completely vulnerable, completely open, and in fact, most likely, even though here she was, quote, a lowly Samaritan, she may have been very, very lowly even among the Samaritans, because we're talking about a woman who's been married 5 times and is living with a man right now she's not even married to. You know, I mean, if you just put yourself in the mindset of the times, this is, you know, talk about the scum of the earth, right? And yet, grace awareness offers itself to her, right? Grace awareness offers itself to her, and she immediately becomes vulnerable. She doesn't try to hide anything. She lets everything be exposed, and she accepts grace awareness. So it happens very, very, very quickly. And, you know, I think the woman is actually a symbol, of course. I think everything in here is a symbol. But I think the woman is a symbol that is telling us that we can become vulnerable. But really what I want to say is we can trust that all of the things about us that we think are horrible and are ugly and make us the scum of the earth and make us the one that, you know, all of the things about us that we think we have to hide, right? We can stop immediately trying to hide it. We can move through this purification phase very, very quickly, and grace awareness is there. So what this says to me then is, since this story is in the Bible, that we all have the possibility of reaching for grace awareness as quickly and as easily as the Samaritan woman did, since we all have that, maybe what we could do when we leave this teaching today is we could begin to pay attention to, how do I still hide? Where am I not being as vulnerable and as open, as willing to unhide as this woman? And, you know, every time we act or say things in a certain way to try to get people to perceive us in a certain way, you know, that's a way that we're hiding. Every time that we defend ourselves in one way or another, that's a way that we're hiding. Every time we blame someone else for our upset, that is a way that we are hiding. If we could start to find all of the ways that we are hiding and just say, I'm not hiding anymore. I'm coming out into the light like the Samaritan woman. We could move through the purification phase very, very quickly and be greeted by grace awareness. And then immerse ourselves into that living water, so that we never thirst again. It's a magnificent, magnificent story. It's difficult for people, however, because most people, although they say that they don't, most people actually do believe that they are the scum of the earth, that their sins really do need to be hidden, or their weaknesses, what makes them less than others, really needs to be hidden, because they think that's their truth. And this is what Jesus was referring to way back when he was talking to Nicodemus. In chapter 3, he said, this is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. He's not really saying that your deeds are evil. He's saying this is what you believe. You believe that your deeds are evil. You believe that you are completely unworthy. You believe that you are the scum of the earth. You are the lowest of the low. And as a result of that belief, you continue to hide. You will not stop your defending. You will not stop your blaming. You will not stop your manipulation and your control, because you're too afraid. You're too afraid, and so you stay in the dark. You feel safer in the dark. And then in chapter 4, we're given this example of this Samaritan woman. And this example says, but look, if you can let go of your fear, and if you can stop all of your hiding now, let everything be exposed. Let people think whatever they want to think about you. Don't try and control their perception of you, right? Let it all be. Look how quickly you can go through this purification phase and become awakened to grace awareness. So again, it's a wonderful, wonderful story and a wonderful symbol. And next week when we come back, we will start with a story titled The Disciples Rejoin Jesus. And we'll see what that story is about. So Dove has written in the room, I am not willing to deny the truth anymore. And then he says, last unanswered question, which I'm not sure what that is. Maybe that's a book, Dove. I don't really know what that is. But yeah, that's the state of mind that we need to adopt, isn't it, Dove? I am not willing to deny the truth anymore. Oh, that's from the ACIM. Okay, the last unanswered question is a chapter in ACIM. Okay, thank you. Or a section. Good. So yeah, we have to adopt that attitude. I am not willing to deny the truth anymore, which really is also saying I need to stop hiding all of this falsehood as if it's truth. And again, that's what the story of the Samaritan woman represents. So with that, I started to say I'm out of here, but I think I'm up next on the schedule. I think I'm not out of here. I think what I am going to do is, again, I like to be still for a moment. I like that little transition. So I'll be still for a moment, and then I will put on the music, and we will begin prayer circle. And you may hear Jamie crying in the background. She wants me to get up from the computer and take her out.